a common story. You know, a pastor walked away from his wife and his children for a woman on his staff. And when he was confronted about this sin, his response was, "I know it's wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway. I know that God will forgive me." And now, when we talk about this, this is the title that I've given this, the life and death power of sex and romance. And when we talk about sex, there are two ways that we can think about this. One is this word being prudish about this, and I just looked up this word. I'd seen it in some things that I'd read. But being prudish is that we're shocked that we would even talk about sexuality or sex. And the other is that we are to have a proper reverence for sex. But it's not that we don't talk about it, because it is in the Bible. And I was looking forward to, I am on the speakers committee, and I was looking forward to, I wasn't assigned this chapter at first, but then it worked out that I was. And looking forward to sharing some things with you tonight. But that example that I gave to you of this pastor walking away from his wife and children, you know, this was obviously devastating to his wife, his children, his church. It was heartbreaking, but it didn't happen overnight. This pastor had developed a problem with pornography at the age of 12. There were times when it was worse than others as he was growing up. There were times that he got caught, repented, sought counseling, seemed to be freed of it. But something that started out as small as a few looks at a magazine when he was a boy really destroyed his ministry. Sexual sin is so seductive and dangerous because it can start out small, and in many cases is seemingly innocent, and then before you know it, your life has been ruined. You may think to yourself, what's the harm in this relationship? What's the harm in a little innocent flirting? I'll never do anything anyway. You will destroy your life, and you won't even see it coming. Now, what I relate to you is a short portion from a book called Exalting Jesus in Proverbs. And so this evening, again, we'll consider this, the life and death power of sex and romance. And so as we look at life lessons from Proverbs, looking at chapter 5, I'm thankful that we're looking at this, because we can see that the Bible is so relevant to our lives. And, you know, I do feel like I'm preaching to the choir, but I pray that the things that I share with you tonight, it will touch your hearts, and that you can then share to your children, to your grandchildren, to yourselves, the things that we'll talk about tonight. The Bible is so practical. It talks about our desires, our needs, about anger, forgiveness, integrity, money, success and failure, what we believe, why we believe it, and also about love, marriage, sex, and adultery. Now, you may have heard me mention that at youth group we went through this series called Swipe Right. This is where this title came from, the life and death power of sex and romance. And a lot of the sermon points that I'm going to share with you tonight are from this book, because the author of this book is very creative, and I think you'll see that as we go through this. But our kids, the biggest influence in the lives of children are parents. However, social media, Netflix, the music that they're listening to are also a huge influence in the lives of our children. And so we need to be able to talk about these things, not be prudish about this. And so hopefully the things that I share with you tonight won't make you feel that way, but that you would be able to share this with somebody else as well. So can you remember when your parents talked to you about the birds and the bees? Did that happen 60 years ago? Lately, they refer to it as the talk. However, some of the resources that I'm reading as I work with youth here, but also having children of my own, is that it's the importance of one conversation, but it's not just one time, it's that conversation throughout the lives of our children. What would you say to somebody who says, I'm looking at pornography? What would you say to somebody who says, I slept with a prostitute? What would you say to somebody who says, I'm having an affair with someone that I work with? Well, Proverbs 5 deals with that. Proverbs 5 will deal with these questions. And as we look at Proverbs 5, we'll see that again, it's a lesson that a father is giving to his son. And commentators say that there are 10 lessons at the beginning of the book of Proverbs that a father is teaching his son. And this is an important one, that the father wants to pass on wisdom to his son. Proverbs, they're not just good advice, but they're God's invitation for us to learn from past generations. And this wisdom, it's not just knowledge. It's not just things that we want to know in our heads. You can be a smart person, but not very wise, because wisdom is applying that knowledge. It's skillful living, putting into practice what you have learned. I don't know if you feel this too, but we're looking at James in the morning and then Proverbs in the evening. It's kind of a double whammy, because James has been likened to the book of Proverbs. It's wisdom literature. And so, you know, we're getting hit hard with, we need to put our faith into practice. So I don't know if I'd do this again, having both James and Proverbs in the same day, but here we go. The first two verses, if you're not in Proverbs 5, I will have the verses on the screen, but I encourage you to look in your own Bibles as well. So again, a father talking to the son, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Turn your ear to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. Tim Keller, well-known author and pastor, he wrote a book called God's Wisdom for Navigating Life. And I found this helpful. Think about the contrast of the Psalms and the Proverbs. He said this, the Psalms are filled with expressions of emotion, of pain, joy, and praise. They show us how to process our experiences before God. But by contrast, Proverbs is a very different book. It calls us to study, to think, to learn the practical discipline of centering all our thoughts and actions on God. Indeed, one of the main messages of Proverbs is, you've never really thought enough about anything. That just gripped me. You've never thought enough about anything. And so we have the Proverbs to meditate on. Interesting, just that contrast with the book of Psalms. Now, this is the first point for tonight. Don't trade God's lifelong gift for a short-term appetite. Don't trade God's lifelong gift for a short-term appetite. So verses 3 and 4 say this, for the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Let me just say at the outset here again that this is a father speaking to a son, but this could be a mother speaking to a daughter, or a father speaking to a daughter. And so these aren't gender specific necessarily, but here in Proverbs we see that the adulterous woman is described for us. Now, God wants us to have amazing sex, but that is to be within the confines, the boundaries of marriage. Sexual intimacy is to be within marriage. Most people will get married. However, in today's culture, marriage is not so important. But I think that in past generations, we've said this, don't have sex. But maybe that's misleading, because what we really should be saying is wait until it's godly and it's right. Because we're not saying that sex is a bad thing, because it's God's idea. Again, in this book called Exalting Jesus in Proverbs, the author says, do not just say no in regard to sex, when you talk about it with your children, the no alone will not work because sex is too powerful. The church has often neglected our duty to talk about this topic that is all over the Bible. God gave sex as a good gift to be enjoyed in marriage. So instead of just saying no with your kids, point them to the beauty of marriage and the goodness of sex in marriage. Yes, of course, the culture downplays marriage because it is a picture of the gospel. But we need to tell our kids that their desires and urges teach them they are meant to be married. And so we see the picture of marriage, Genesis 2, 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. This is God's good design for marriage. Marriage is only between one man and one woman. This is the biblical sexual ethic. Hebrews 13, the writer of Hebrews says, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. Now in the Message, it says this, honor marriage and guard the sacredness of sexual intimacy between wife and husband. This is a gift that God has given. So let's not trade God's lifelong gift for a short-term appetite. And we see this short-term appetite played out in the life of Esau. And this, again, is in the Message version. It says in Hebrews 12, watch out for the Esau syndrome, trading away God's lifelong gift in order to satisfy a short-term appetite. You well know how Esau later regretted that impulsive act and wanted God's blessing. But by then it was too late, tears or no tears. So if we recall the story of Esau, that he was a twin, he was the hairy twin, and he was the oldest boy that was born. Esau, the grandson of Abraham, the father of Israel. His father was Isaac, and his twin brother being Jacob. Now, as we know, Esau, he was a hunter, and so he liked the outdoors. But Jacob, he was kind of a mama's boy, and he liked to be at home, and he liked the indoors more so. Well, one day, Jacob, he had the crock pot on. He was cooking stew, and Esau, he comes in from a long day, and he demands to have a bowl of that soup, that stew. And as we know, Jacob, who lives up to his name literally means he cheats. We also know that it's he grasps the heel, but he's a deceiver. And Jacob says, you know, before I give you this bowl of stew, I would like you to sell me your birthright, to give that away to me. And, you know, Esau didn't prize that highly in his mind there. And we perhaps don't understand what a birthright really means in our culture. But for them, it would have meant, as the firstborn son, which Esau was, that he would have a double portion of the inheritance. So there was that special meaning to the birthright. Also, there would be a leadership role in the family. But perhaps the most important was that spiritual blessing that would be the firstborn son as having that birthright. And so in Esau's case, he gave up that special blessing for a bowl of soup. And really, he gave up being an ancestor to Jesus because he would have been in the line of the Messiah. But Jacob got that. Again, this is God's plan. But Esau, that Esau syndrome, trading God's lifelong gift for a short-term appetite. I want to show you this video clip. It is the author of this book giving a message, but he's going to talk about the problem of pineapples. Let me just show you this.
It's like pineapples. This here is your common garden variety pineapple. Now, none of you oohed and awed and gasped when I brought that out of the tiny crate under that chair. But there was a day when this would have absolutely blown you away to see a pineapple with your own eyes. You see, they were discovered by Europeans in 1492 when Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And I know it's a drama right now. Los Angeles just disowned him. But like, here's the thing. When Columbus came to the New World, these pineapples, which had grown in South America but had then been transplanted to the Caribbean, they had never been seen by any European eyes. And they were dumbfounded by this mysterious fruit that was shaped like a pine cone but juicy on the inside like a golden apple. So they called it a pineapple, and he brought it back to Europe. Everybody freaked out. All the royalty, all the kings, the who's who of Europe had to get their hands on a pineapple. So they would be brought over by the ships that would cross the Atlantic Ocean, and people basically went nuts over them to the extent that at the height of the pineapple craze, it would have been the ultimate status symbol of a lifetime to have a pineapple in your possession. They were sold in today's currency at the height for $8,000 for a single pineapple. This informed art, this informed architecture. When Christopher Wren designed St. Paul's Cathedral in London, look at the top. What did he put on the top of it? A golden pineapple. They're all over London. They're all over Europe. Y'all thought just it was a Williams and Sonoma symbol of hospitality. That's how it eventually became. But it was power. It was prestige. Many people couldn't get their hands on an actual pineapple that they would own themselves. So they had rental services where you could rent it for the day. You would just rent it. What would you do with it? You couldn't eat it. No. You could. If you eat it, you bought it, y'all. You would have it in your home, and you would have a party, and it would be a viewing party where at some point in the night, they would reveal the pineapple. And all the guests would see. You're like, those old people are so dumb. Yeah, what do you think they would think about us just sitting around staring at our Netflix all the time? Ooh, Instagram, right? We think they're crazy looking at a pineapple. I think it's probably more relaxing and better for your soul. That's all I'm saying. So here's what's crazy about this. This obsession went on for a couple hundred years. But then eventually the demand caused the industrious to realize, I can make a quick buck. So the pineapple plantation started popping up all over Hawaii. Dole got their action on. And the steamship made it easier to get more and more and more and more and more and more across to Europe to the people that wanted it. And of course, as the supply went up, the demand went down to the point that now we have pineapple chunks. Guys, we've gone from a masterpiece and a work of art to chunks. To chunks. But here, stay with me. Stay with me. Here's the thing. This is not something to ogle. This is not something to put on top of a building. This is not something that anybody's impressed by. This is not the ultimate symbol of luxury and privilege, because something that's wide available to everybody is hotly desired by nobody. And so it is with sex. I guess sex with everyone is kind of the same as sex with no one. It's just pineapple chunks to be speared one click at a time on your laptop, swipe through one person at a time. You see, what makes sex so special, what makes sex so amazing, is it was meant to be this ultra-guarded experience that out of a whole world, there was one person that you were naked and vulnerable before. It was an ultra-exclusive club, so much so that it only had one member in the whole world. That's just this one guarded experience that's to be treasured, that's to be valued. That's what God intends for you to have when it comes to your sexual experience. That's his plan.
You get that picture? So prizing a pineapple that it was, but now it's so common that there's no thought to its value. And sadly, this is how sex has been viewed in our culture. Once a gift that God has given, but now, you know, it's crazy. All of the apps that about relationships, it's really for a hookup for one night, and you could be with somebody different every night of the week if you want that. It's so crazy, and it's foreign to me, thank God, but it's foreign to us, but this is how our society lives right now. But here, this father is giving this warning to the son, don't trade this gift that God has given for a short-term appetite. This is the second point. You don't want what the devil's got in his crock pot. So the warning is there, don't trade that. But here, these are the consequences. You don't want what is in that crock pot. There are consequences to sexual sin. Satan wants to slow cook the death of our calling, the death of his blessing, God's blessing in our lives. These are the consequences. Keep, verse 8, keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you lose your honor to others and your dignity to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich the house of another. At the end of your life, you will groan when your flesh and body are spent. Then down to verse 14, I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. What is meant to be enjoyed in marriage results in loss. Whether that is honor, verse 9 talks about, wealth, this could be money that's lost, wasted, given to a prostitute. Then there is the regret, look at verse 11, at the end of your life, you will groan. What regret for those who would throw away this gift and just give it away for some short-term appetite, some desire, feeling that we can be satisfied by indulging in this life of sin. And then verse 14, there will be public humiliation. Before the assembled congregation, there can be embarrassment, shame, and humiliation. These are some of the consequences to this life of sin. We don't want what the devil has in the crock pot. So how we live our lives now, that we can live carefully now so that we can protect our future. We don't want what the devil has in his crock pot. And the last point is this, date your mate, or the devil will find someone who will. Now, you can see from these points, we've gone from a warning to the consequences, and now, what's God's cure? What's God's antidote? How does God provide for us? Is that God gives us a vision of what marriage is like. And so, these verses here, starting at verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares, let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be intoxicated with her love. This is God's picture for marriage, so that we can be satisfied with our spouses. We should date our mates. Wait for when it's godly and right to experience sex. I think, again, that sometimes we think that sex is Satan's idea, but this is God's idea. God created this. And here's a great description of sex to be enjoyed in its right context, and that context is marriage. So here we see in verse 15 that sexual intimacy is described as drinking water. A man is refreshed by his wife, and this is right, and it's good, and it's blessed by God. It says, may your fountain be blessed. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. This is in the Bible. Yes. Verse 20. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? For your ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all your paths. The evil deeds of the wicked ensnare them, the cords of their sins hold them fast. For lack of discipline, they will die, led astray by their own great folly. Again, for lack of discipline, they will die. There can be a death-like existence in our lives when we don't regret-proof our marriage bed, we don't regret-proof our deathbed, that we will be led astray. Again, this is wisdom being passed on from a father to his son. You know, I have some young guys working with the youth. You know, when you get to know people over time, they feel comfortable to tell you things. And so this is a quote that I love. One of my favorites, talking to guys who are struggling with viewing pornography, that kind of thing. But this is from John Piper. It says this, the fire of lust's pleasures must be fought with the fire of God's pleasures. If we try to fight the fire of lust with prohibitions and threats alone, even the terrible warnings of Jesus, we will fail. We must fight it with a massive promise of superior happiness. We must swallow up the little flicker of lust pleasure in the conflagration of holy satisfaction. Lust is a little flicker, but this holy conflagration, that's like a huge bonfire. And so God's promise of happiness is so much better than what the world can offer. You know, we do have desires. One thing that, again, this pastor says is just about our sex drives, that we have sex drives and those are God-given, but don't let sex drive our lives because we need to have control. And so this, the lust that we experience doesn't promise any happiness because it ultimately doesn't satisfy. But the promise that God has for us, ultimately being satisfied in Him, but He gives us good gifts. Most of us, God willing, will be married. And so God has allowed for that to be a way that we can satisfy the desires that we have. Now, the last thing that I want to say is this, that even though sexual sin can lead to bitterness in our lives, verse 4 says, you know, being with the adulterous woman, you find out that it's bitter. The cross of Jesus Christ can make what was bitter sweet again. You may have eaten what was in the devil's crock pot, and Satan's lie is that because we've messed up, that there's no hope for me. You know, maybe this isn't a message for you, but it's a message that you can share with somebody else. They've messed up and don't feel like God can forgive them, and so they're stuck living in a life of shame and of guilt and of humiliation, and nobody sees that. But it's not over, and that's because of the cross of Jesus Christ, that God forgives, God heals, God restores. And yes, even though we experience the consequences of sin in our lives, that God can still use us. When we think about sowing and reaping, we do reap what we sow. And that happens with sin, sexual sin. But we can start to sow new seeds and reap from that as well. So these points from Proverbs 5, so, so practical. Don't trade God's lifelong gift for a short-term appetite. You don't want what the devil's got in his crock pot. And date your mate, or the devil will find someone who will. Life lessons from Proverbs, very practical for us as Christians. And our young people need to hear this. College and careers need to hear this. Adults in the workplace need to hear this as well. So by God's grace, may we be warned and walk the path that God has given us, which is right and good. Let's close in prayer. Father, I want to pray for those who are single, that they would fight for their future, that you would help them to protect future relationships, that you would bless them with. Lord, and I just pray that as you're leading towards relationships, towards marriage, that you would guard them in that. I pray for those who are married here and in our church family, Lord, that you would help them to cherish and protect their marriage bed. Father, Lord, we know that the devil is a lion seeking for people to devour. And so it could seem like innocent flirting with somebody at work. It could be a neighbor. It could be some situation like that, Lord, that lust and desire that is wrong leads nowhere good. Father, I pray for parents and for grandparents that you would help them to be wise as they speak to children and to grandchildren. Father, I pray that we wouldn't just give our children cell phones and they can have access to anything that they want, which is not wise. And so I pray for parents, Lord, and grandparents. Help us to be wise in this godless age. Lord, I pray for all of us, Lord, that you would give us strength to display the beauty of marriage and the gift that you have given. May we have wisdom to be a people of integrity, that our attitude would be that we would treasure sex for the gift that it is and not treat it as just a pineapple that doesn't have any meaning anymore because of its availability. So Lord, I pray for Bethel. Thank you that this place is a place that people can struggle and get the help that they need. I pray for this new Conquer Series group that's going to meet in April. I pray for guys who are continuing to meet and to get help that they need. And Lord, this is not just a problem for men, but also for women, that people will get the help that they need. Lord, when secrets are there, then there's shame and guilt and just a continuation down this path, Father. Thank you for your word. Thank you that it's relevant for our lives, that it's helpful in every area of our lives. So, Father, please keep us safe as we travel home. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for being here. Let me know if you have any questions.